And you're very welcome to Solid Foundations Property Podcast once again. Another month has gone by in 2024. Well, we're backing up our special guest from last month to another very, very good special guest this month once again. Lisa, it's been a busy start to the year. How's the property sector or season started off down in the Republic, of course, where you specialise in? More so down towards the Waterford area. How's things been going?
Yeah, good. Yeah, there's a lot been happening. So we are currently in the conveyancing process for a nice big 9-bedroom house at the moment. And yeah, there's some other bits and pieces going on at the moment. So yeah, been kept busy. So it's going well. And how about you, Port?
Yeah, big response.
How's going?
Yeah, well, there's joiners in, there's kitchens going in at the minute. The kitchen, it's two kitchens nearly when it comes to HMO that we're putting in. But no, nearly there with that one. Similar to yourself, we have a 9-bed just about to kick off. So really looking forward to that. We've just agreed on that, and straight away we've started on it. So all hands on deck as well. But on this particular podcast, we've got a special guest, Lisa, and you're going to tell our listeners who it is.
Yeah, so this is my favourite topic is tax. So we've got the property tax expert from Ireland. He's been around the block when it comes to taxation, and he knows any question that I've ever asked him. He's always had the answer spot on. His name is Brendan Allen, and yeah, I'm looking forward to asking him loads of questions.
How are you doing, Brendan?
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me. It's always great to talk about tax, and I get the opportunity to speak without my wife interrupting me, which is always a bonus.
Well, look, Brendan, you've done something right anyway, but you're in sunny Carlow there. You've been specialising in tax throughout your career. You're the Pep Guardiola of tax, let's put it that way. If you're into football, if golf, is it Rory McIlroy or what is it?
No, yeah, well, I'd be more in the Rory McIlroy era, although I did play a lot of rugby at various different levels, but that was many years ago. But there you go. So happy to talk about tax. So if any tax queries that yourselves have or your listeners, I'm very happy to take them.
Well, Lisa,
yeah, Parker.
I was just going to say we'd be inundated with tax questions, tax queries, people constantly asking about it. I think, Lisa, you always say the Irish have something about tax. They just consistently ask about it all the time. So Lisa's been doing a lot of research. She has, of course, if she doesn't tell you, Brendan, she worked in the Big Four as well. She's an accountant, so she's well. She's been waiting for you. She's got a lot of questions. So
I've been ambushed.
I'm excited about this one, Brian. It's going to be a great podcast.
God help you if you're excited about tax. You leave it to me.
Anyway. Get ready for this ambush now, Brendan. So I'm going to go through some of the questions that were really important for me when I first started out, and I'm actually noticing now there's a couple of like kind of Facebook groups that we're on, like property investor Facebook groups, and these kind of questions get asked multiple times, and it's and there's a lot of misinformation out there. And I see you try to kind of put people straight on some of those, you know, in terms of advice on those groups. So I suppose, look, this podcast can help with some of these questions. So the first big one that always comes up, Brendan, is buying property in your personal name versus your company name. Could you kind of talk us through that? Is there a magic number where you, like, so from my perspective, I believe that, like, you know, the first maybe 5, 6, 7 houses should be purchased in your personal name, and anything over that then to be put into a company. But maybe you could kind of talk us through that as to if that's true or not, and as considerations that we need to take into account.
Indeed. Well, first of all, you need to set yourself up, get yourself going, in my opinion. A company, it can be complicated. So the do it easy, first of all, buy your first, second, third, fourth, fifth. And then what you're generating yourself into is into a business. When you get to that particular level of income, it is worthwhile then looking at, should you be doing this in a company or should you continue as a sole trader? Now, what you've got to consider ultimately is this. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to build wealth or are you trying to have an income? Now, the answer is, if you're trying to build wealth, a company is a great way of doing it. Do you want to reduce exposure to inheritance tax? Company is a great way of doing that as well. So you've got to consider those sort of concepts and strategies as what's right for you. You can, by the way, even if you start off as a sole trader with a number of properties, once you get to at least five or six, where we could argue with the revenue, hey, we're now operating a business, we can transfer all of those properties into the company to avail of the lower tax rate. I'll talk a bit more about that. The current tax rate that you're looking at, if you are a sole trader, typically will take you up to 52%. So who wants to pay tax at that rate? Would you not prefer to be paying it at the 25% corporate tax rate?
Absolutely.
Plus, yeah, well, this is it. And the other thing to remember is when you operate through a company, it is a lot cheaper, because if you think of it in this way, first of all, say you've got debt of 400,000, okay? It's either 400,000 as a limited company, 400,000 as a sole trader. So I'm going to use, if you just think of a 50% tax rate, just to make the maths easier for me. So to clear the funds, clear that loan of 400,000, you need 800,000. Okay?
Yeah.
Or if you're operating through a company with exactly the same amount of borrowing, you need 533,000. So you can see there is potentially a saving of 266,667. So it's well worthwhile. I have a little slide on that perhaps I can send on to you. You might want to pass it along to any people who make inquiries about it. So it's a lot cheaper to operate through a company. It is more complex. There are other issues then with the limited company, in that you've got to file annual accounts with the company's registration office. In addition, then you've got to pay accountant's fees to get your accounts prepared. But as I said, you're paying less tax. There is a few snags involved. Number one, once you pay your 25% tax, and whatever is left over, the bit after tax, if you don't do anything with that money, within 18 months of the financial year end, the revenue will try to put on what's called a close company surcharge. There is ways around that. Typically, up to recent years, has been the imposition of a holding company over your rental company. You would do a dividend up, and because you've no money that could be subject to a close company surcharge left in your rental company, no surcharge applies, and the money is held up in the holding company. Now, there is, since January of 23, another option, and that's this. And what you can do is pay money into an employer's PRSA pension scheme. And the effect of that is you could eliminate all your corporate taxes. Think about that. And then you're building up a pension scheme. Pardon?
I just want to stop you there and ask you a question on the PRSA. So you're saying,
yep,
if we had our prop, say we have 10 properties in this company, and it's generating a net income of after tax of, look, before tax, say of, I don't know, 50 grand. If we put that 50 grand into a PRSA, then it effectively makes the profit of that company zero, and therefore there is no tax.
That's exactly the way. Yeah. Now, to do that, however, you must be an employee of the company and you must be taking a salary from the company. So, for example,
salary then. So this is where I need clarification. So when you run a company that has investment income, will the revenue allow you to take a normal salary, or is it like, does it have to be 10% of the rental profits? And therefore, does that limit the amount you can put into the PRSA?
Right, there are two questions there. One of the drawbacks in using a company is that what the revenue state that they will allow without question a director's fees of 10% of the gross rental. In other circumstances where you can demonstrate active management of the properties, you can go up to 15%, and in some cases a bit higher, provided you can justify it. Now, so you need to be taking that type of salary out. The legislation as it's currently framed, there is no limit on the amount of money that you can put into your PRSA employer's pension. Now, in the old days, it used to be based around what salary you were taking out and so forth. No longer applies, gone, finito. So you could be, for example, taking out 10,000, and if the funds were available in the company, put 50,000 into your PRSA scheme.
Yeah, so that is kind of very, very beneficial to someone who's got a job, who's got a salary, and has a pension structure with the company.
Yeah, but it's got to be an employer's PRSA pension. That's the only way this will work. The other good thing about it is this. If you start funding your pension, the maximum you can put into a pension is 2 million. So hopefully, Lisa, you're probably near that now. And but think about it. Once you have sufficient funds inside in the pension, guess what? The pension could buy property. Okay, it is independent of the company, and the pension has no income tax to pay, no CGT to pay when it sells a property. So you just continue to build your fund.
Okay, so now I've got a couple of questions. So it has to be an employer's PRSA. Yeah. It's the first
Correct.
One, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then once so if I incorporate my company with my five properties, I have to be an employee of the company, and the company has set up an employee's PRSA for me.
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Is that correct?
So it's the company are making the contributions, not you as an individual. So it's the company making the contributions, not you. And you could, in fact, employ your spouse there as well under a contract of employment. And if we could justify the reason for paying them a salary, you could make PRSA contributions for them also.
Now, is this just for rent and income company, or is this across the board now? Is this the new rules with for companies?
This is the new rules. Company? Yeah, this is the new rules. It will apply to all companies.
Right.
It's got, for example, if you're a sole trader and you employed somebody to do your maintenance or whatever, they're an employee. Okay. So, because they're an employee, you could then get, you could make a contribution to a PRSA for them and get the tax deduction. I would just like to close the blinds because you can see that in sunny Carlo, we get lots of sunshine. So, excuse me.
We can see we can see the sunshine coming in. So just really, Lisa, that's probably something that we definitely didn't know about before we started chatting to Brendan Allen on today's podcast. It is, of course, 2023, I think that came in, Brendan, is that correct?
January 23, yes.
Yeah.
So it's available for 23 and for future years until they change the legislation. I mean, if you think of it from the government's point of view, this is self-funding, and that's what they want the general population to get into. And I mean, it's a good concession, if you like. And up to now, it wasn't allowable against investment income. So even if you had shares or other professional income, the employer's PRSA work. Prior to January, if an employer set up a PRSA scheme for an employee, BIK was imposed. That's gone as well.
Okay. The one thing we just need to kind of make sure everyone understands, though, that the salary that they can pay is 10% and up to 15% of the gross rental income. However, the PRSA contributions, there is no limit to that. So as long as you're paying yourself a small salary, you can put an unlimited amount into that PRSA. Now, the only thing I would say about a PRSA, Brendan, I think we talked about this before, is if you're someone who's trying to use property to replace your income, and equally, like, so just say, like me, I was a full-time chartered accountant and I went into property and I now use property to replace my income. So it's, as you said, it's all about kind of, you know, building wealth versus replacing your income and needing the cash flow. And I suppose when property is in the company structure as opposed to in your personal name, it does kind of encourage you to keep the money generated from the property either within the company or within a pension structure, which means you don't have access to it. So yes, you're building that generational wealth, but I suppose it doesn't really encourage you to spend it, really.
Yeah, well, that's the point where we started off. We said, what are you trying to do? Okay, are you trying to build wealth or are you trying to generate an income? So that's why it might be worthwhile to have a number of properties outside of the company structure where it's sufficient for you to make your living, and the future ones operate them through a company. So, or you can take out, depending on your lifestyle, what salary you want.
It's a really good question because, Brendan, suppose a lot of our listeners are, you know, they're gung-ho getting into property and they don't know why at some stages. But then you start looking at the tax bills and all the other aspects of it come down the line and you go, oh, Jesus, I didn't think of that. You know, I didn't really ask that question. And is that something you see quite a bit in the market?
Yeah, well, I do. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't take the opportunity to listen to yourself and Lisa on this podcast. What they do is go on Facebook and listen to people who use words like, oh, I think I'm allowed to do this, or I guess something else, or you do this, which is totally unlawful or inappropriate or just won't work. And I get really worried if people are thinking of buying a property, 200,000 or whatever value you're putting in, and you're depending on Facebook for your advice, come on. That is not the way. I always try any contributions I make to Facebook. Last line is talk to your accountant. Because if you think of your business, it's like a chair and, you know, or a stool. You've got your property, yourself, and your taxes. So if you unbalance any of those, you're going to run into trouble. So talk to your accountant. Get the right structure for you. And some people, it's a company. Other people, it's not. I was talking to a gentleman earlier today. He's got 27 properties in his own name. So he was saying, I'm now in my 70s. What can I do to avoid inheritance tax for my three children? So we had a chat around that, and we're going to come up with a nice plan for him. And I will be charging him a lot of money to tell him what the answer is. But for your podcast listeners, let's do this. Right.
Kind of like the late show here. I was saying, Brandon,
there's one for everyone in the audience. So what we're going to do is we're going to balance, as we said there, keep some of them outside, some of them inside the company. We're going to use a device called Section 600, which is called incorporation relief. Okay, that incorporation relief effectively moves the properties at their original cost value inside into the company. So we've now got a number of the properties in the company. No CGT applying on the transfer into the company. You'll have 1% stamp duty. Okay, not a big deal now, thankfully. So now we've got them in there. So what are we going to do? We are going to issue shares to Mr. and Mrs. Three children, we will issue shares to them. So, and I'll just talk about the tax aspect of it, but in a moment. Bear in mind, the shares we give to the kids, any of you who have children know, once they reach that sort of age range, till about 25, parents become total idiots. And it takes till they get about 25 to realize you've got a bit of a brain. So you don't want to give them controlling shares. You want to give them shares, ordinary shares, but have a shareholders agreement put in place. Mum and dad are the decision makers. Or you can have what's called a golden share, which is a similar sort of a concept. So we give them the shares, but now we've got a situation where they're getting something for nothing. So there is a tax implication there. The current threshold for children from parents, right? So it's 335 is the current threshold. So we will give them shares up to that amount, put the value on their shares around 335 or less. No taxation involved at that stage. As the company grows, the value of their shares increases, but there's no tax consequence for them.
Because they own the shares from the date they were with them, and they were based on the market value of the property back when that man initially purchased those properties, which would have been a lot less than what they're valued at today.
I wish, Lisa, other clients that I talk to could grab hold of that concept as quickly as you have. And, you know, it is a great way of doing this. So what you're doing, just think about it, you're eliminating a layer of inheritance tax. And if you want to even get a bit smarter, although it does cost, you can take out what's called a Section 72 policy. You'll get tax relief on the contributions. This policy, its sole reason for it is to pay inheritance tax. So because what can happen if mum and dad eventually die, if they give you their shares, there will be a possible tax liability there.
Yeah.
So by having a Section 72 in place, it either mitigates it or makes it go away totally. So it's a nice package of things. Pardon?
Are you to take that Section 72 out at the time of the kids getting shares in the
company? Yeah, I'm not. Yeah. Okay, just so we're clear, I am not giving pension advice. I just talk tax. Talk to your pension advisor about it, and he will put you right on it. But it would need, you know, you could effectively take it out at any stage, but bear in mind, the longer the person has to live, the lesser the initial cost of putting it in place. So but those policies tend to be expensive.
Brendan, just that information alone is worth its weight in gold. And I've used Brendan myself for I'm an accountant, but like Brendan just has tax knowledge that nobody else has. So I would highly recommend if you've got your own personal situation, everyone's got different circumstances and different situations, and you can listen to this podcast, take nuggets from it, But however, unless you actually sit down with someone like Brendan and go through your personal situation, you know, you could be doing it wrong. You could be like wasting so much money. So I would highly advise you to, if you are interested in property, because there is so much tax involved around property as an asset class, I would highly advise you to make contact with Brendan. Brendan, I've just got a couple of questions. Right. So there's different strategies that you can have in terms of property. So myself and Pork were talking before you got on, and we said, look, why are we so kind of, why is there so much tax around property and versus any other asset class? And I said, well, I think it's because, like with any other asset class, there's not as much cash flowing around, and where there's cash flowing, it means there's more tax naturally. So from the rental income. So there's different strategies, Brendan, that people can take. So there could be people that are buying property below market value, refurbing them, flipping them on straight away. There's other people who are involved in the property industry, and their sole job is to purchase property on behalf of other investors. So they're deal sourcing. Okay. So they might find a property below market value, and they could get maybe $4,000 from an investor in order to find that this ideal property for them. Then there's people like myself and Porik, and we run HMOs and serviced accommodation. So that's short-term kind of lets. And then obviously then we've got the standard buy-to-lets. You know, in terms of like the structure and like a company versus personal name, if someone was focusing just on flips, should they run it in a company? Should they run it in their personal name? Just if you can, don't have to go into too much detail about it, but just in general, that type of question is, if, whatever strategy you're involved in, is there a better structure, a tax structure that you can use?
Okay. You've given me three opportunities to comment. Thank you very much for that. First of all, the myth I would like to explore before we get into these is this. What happens with your income? If you think of your income like a tree, so you've got your central trunk, if you like, and then you've all the different various branches. So you'll have maybe your PAYE income, your rental income, investment income. So it all gets added together, okay? And then the tax rates are applied, okay? So bear in mind, if you are in a married situation, and you've got, you both of you have got income. The you've got 50 up to 84,000. Think of it, is at the lower rate of 20%. So both of you need income. So one of the problems is if you're just going for a single assessment, yes, it is very high. But if both of you are earning, you can get up to 84,000 at the lower rate of 20%, which is reasonable enough. In the previous tax year, it was 80,000. They've adjusted up the bands. Okay, so it's some now. Of course, the other problem is the PRSI at 4% and the USC, which can get up to 8. But look, it's part of the joy of living in Ireland. Now, the other thing you were talking to me about was somebody buying a property, doing a bit of refurb on it, perhaps, and flipping it. So we've got to ask ourselves, what exactly are they doing, right? If you examine it closely, it's like somebody in a sweet shop. They're buying in something, maybe rewrapping the sweets and selling them on. So effectively, that's what you're doing. So think about it. So you're trading. Okay, so you're not in a landlord-tenant situation. You're not in a HMO situation. You're actually trading. So what you're going to be looking at, if you set it up inside an unlimited company, you're going to be looking at 12.5%.
Lovely.
So that could be the way. But also, if you build up a lot of profits in this and the cash is still there, guess what you can do? You can avail of what's called entrepreneurial relief. So you can get the money out, wind up the company, you get the money out at 10%. What's wrong with that?
Is that right?
No. No, this is entrepreneurial relief. So what you must have been working actively in the business for a period of 3 years. You must own more than 5% of the shares, right? And then you get the benefit of up to 1 million at 10%, set as a lifetime value. But you can do this every 6 or 9 years, whatever number of periods you like. But once you get over the million in CGT, you will end up paying the higher rate.
So that's our very first segment on this two-part series of the Solid Foundation Property Podcast, focusing on tax in the Republic of Ireland with tax expert Mr. Brendan Allen. If you liked the very first part, you will love the very second part. So stay tuned. It will be coming in the next couple of weeks on the Solid Foundations Property Podcast.